Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host, Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And here we go, Friday get-together with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. You know, it was supposed to be hot.
Well, no,
I walked out
weekend.
This morning. Well, it may be, but it certainly wasn't this morning. Nice chill in the air.
And you've got some activities planned for later on today?
The Mayor's Cup. I'm sure you're going to be there.
This is golf?
Diker Heights, New York City Public Golf Course. That's to benefit the Parks Foundation, and I will stay on some par 3 and hit with every foursome that comes through, take a picture with them, see if I can't make a hole-in-one, which I never have. Before that, dedicate a new children's golf clinic at Diker Heights.
That's great.
It's a nice day, and, you know, there's not a lot going on in the city. I think City Hall will be fine if I'm out at Diker Beach.
Speaking of things that are kind of nice, I saw a little squib before we get into some other stuff here about Governor's Island. They're going to do bike sharing out on Governor's Island, which I think is a great idea.
You know, it is. Everybody talked about the bike sharing in Paris.
I've seen it.
I went there. It is very impressive. That's the good news. The bad news is something like 20% of the bikes get returned or don't return, or if they return, they're all beaten up. It is a very big problem. It doesn't work.
It's not flawless.
That's a fair statement. Whether or not they keep it going, I don't know. I mean, you got to hand it to Paris for at least trying new things. And bicycling uses less space, much better for the environment, all that sort of stuff. In New York City, we are so addicted to automobiles. The roads, because of the weather and the traffic, are less conducive to bikes. When the city has tried to do bus lanes, in some places they've worked, but in a lot of them, people just drive in them, so it doesn't really accomplish anything. Probably makes it more dangerous. And I think we should keep finding ways for people that want to bike, where they can park their bike, where they can ride it. We've tried to get a bicycle lane, if you remember, all the way around Manhattan. And a lot of it is done. There are some problematic places, for example, by the UN, where there's just no place, no park along the river. The buildings are built out over the drive right to the edge. So it's a work in progress. But bicycling on Governor's Island, you can't take the bike anyplace.
No, that's true. You're stuck.
You can't even
get
off.
Well, you could, but it's going to get wet. And it's not going to be
so
good.
I think swimming from there, particularly carrying a bike, would be hard.
On a related subject, there was an article this past week about Metro North, and they have banned bicycles from the trains, but for a good reason, not a bad reason. The ridership of Metro North is up so much that the trains are so crowded that they have to ban the
ridership
bikes.
In the subways too is up because of the cause. You know, capitalism works. That's why congestion pricing was a great idea. It would force people out of their cars onto mass transit. It also would have given us a lot of extra money to expand mass transit. Just having higher gasoline prices does get some people to move over, but it's still the roads are chock-a-block full. Where'd that expression come from? Somebody will write the story, I'm sure. But it doesn't give us the money to expand mass transit, and so far Albany, of course, has come up with nothing. The funny thing is you talk about bicycles. This morning when I was getting on the subway, somebody was coming up the stairs of the subway stop with a bicycle.
You see it on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, when the trains are full, I'm much more sympathetic to strollers. After all, you know, somebody's got a baby, you really can't not. Bicycles, people say, oh, well, I've got to be able to take my bike someplace. But they're so big in a crowded subway train. I don't run the subway system. I don't run the MTA. But if I did, and had total power, I guess I would say that just is too crowded.
Just before our news at 8 o'clock, I was relating a story that we've been talking about this morning about airline ticket prices, and this relates to the price of fuel at the moment. But I want to get your input as a mayor and also a businessman and where you think we're going to head here. One airline to Charleston, South Carolina, ticket price went from $138 to $605. Now, those sort of increases are hard to cope with, and they will change all sorts of economies. And how do you think it affects you and
us? There's no question we would love to see low-cost transportation so that people could come to New York and spend their money in New York rather than spending the money where they live, work, or outside, or sending the money to the airlines. Having said that, I think the following is true. If you take all of the airlines throughout history, from the Wright brothers to today, and add up all their profits and losses, they've never made a dime, probably lost money, and the airlines are closing left and right. So even when they're raising the fares, and nobody likes that, but it isn't like they're making a lot of money. They can't even stay in business. The big thing is the cost of fuel. Gasoline or oil was $30 a barrel 2-3 years ago. Today, it's $130 a barrel.
We will see airlines go out of business. They're already contracting in their
United the other day closed down TED, their low-cost airline, and grounded 15-20% of their fleet. So did American.
But airline travel is not a luxury. It is a utility now.
Do you think it's going back to being a luxury at these prices?
Well, it is, but do you think that there is some sort of regulation that needs to happen possibly in the future?
You can regulate them, but that means the taxpayer is going to start subsidizing the airlines. We already do that with rail, and that hasn't worked.
That doesn't work at all. Right?
You got it. I mean, let's get serious. I met 2 weeks ago with a congressman from Orlando, Florida, Micah, I think is the way he pronounced his name, MICA, very smart guy, ranking Republican on one of the transportation committees. He has this bug in his bonnet about real high speed from Washington to New York through Philadelphia to Boston. It is a great idea, but somebody's got to fund it, and it's going to be funded with federal monies. You want to start having all the airlines funded with federal monies, we don't have that kind of money. But I think one of these things is, and Micah's exactly right, we have not been investing in the infrastructure. Roosevelt, during the Depression, funded 2 or 3 decades of growth because the jobs he created were infrastructure jobs. Eisenhower came along, did the same thing, built the interstate highway system. Since then, we've fundamentally done nothing. And I'm not so worried about the federal government. I can yell and scream, but I don't have a lot to say there. State government, turns out I don't have a lot to say either. But that's us. The MTA is a system that was designed for New York City. And people that get in and out, it serves the suburbs, but to the whole concept, there's some people that take it within the suburbs, but generally it's to get people in and out of the central business district where they shop or work or go to school or get treated for illnesses or whatever, and it does not do what we need. And I saw there's an article in the paper today about possibility of a fare.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Well, look, the MTA, you can see where their revenues come from. They come from ridership. That's probably up a little bit because there are more riders. But the total fares, so the average fare today is roughly where it was 20 years ago or something because of all the discounts. I think the average person
figuring inflation in.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about raising it, and it does go up, but we talk about the high rate, maximum individual fare rate rather than the effective rate. I, for example, have a Metro card, but a senior card. I ride for $1 a ride. My friend of mine, whose business is going around the city, he calculates it costs him 47 cents a ride because he gets a monthly unlimited and uses
it all the time.
So the fares, there's no easy answer as to what people are paying, but they get money from fares and they get money from taxes. And one of the taxes that they get money from is the real estate transaction tax. When you sell a building, we tax it. We get some, state gets some, MTA gets some. And if you remember a couple of years ago, we had all of a sudden more revenues coming in than we counted on, so did the state, and so did the MTA. And everybody made fun of the MTA saying, oh, they're so stupid. Look, they couldn't calculate their revenues. Nobody anticipated all of the big building transactions that took place in 06 and 07, which are really not taking place now. So the MTA is going to have less revenue. We're going to have to find alternative sources there, and the capital plan is a shambles. There's no money for it whatsoever, and I haven't heard one person talk about it in Albany. It's just congestion pricing came and went, okay, forget about the strap.
Right, now we don't have to worry about it.
We don't have to worry. We're not going to invest any money, and they don't have a lot of money. And they haven't come up with any of the, they talked about all these alternatives, zero. But I think there's a very good big likelihood of we're going to have to face the issue of fare increase or something else. And I'll tell you, the city doesn't have any money to give. Where are the money?
Well, that was sort of where my question was starting, how you see the future here. We'll get into a little bit more of this, other things as well. We've got lots to talk about. And, of course, you're encouraged. You want to ask the mayor some questions. Our telephone number is 800-321-0710 at the end of the program. We will get to you, 800-321-0710. Coming right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Last Friday, just a week ago, we had that crane collapse.
Terrible. Two people died.
Awful.
Really.
Yeah. Awful situation. I know that you have put the full force of the mayor's office and the building department. What changes do you think might come?
Well, we've got a whole bunch of things. One thing is, keep in mind, with all the expansion in construction in this city, the safety record of the construction industry was actually very good right up until the beginning of this year. It's really only in the last 5 months. In the last 5 months, we've had more construction fatalities than we did all of last year.
Coincidence?
And we've had, well, we're going to try to find out. It's hard to see a connection because there's so many different companies, so many different sites, so many different types of buildings. The two cranes, it does not look like that. We're not sure yet exactly what happened, but it doesn't look like there is, or why it happened, because what happened is clear. In one case, a strap broke and the collar slipped down the crane shaft, taking out the next collar. Then both of them slipped down, taking out the third. And then you have a crane with no supports and it falls over. In this case, some steel broke. Whether it was at a weld or not, we don't know yet. And the cab fell off. The tower itself stayed up. But they don't seem to have any connection. Whether or not practices have gotten sloppy or not, I don't know. That's something that we're investigating. But what we can do is to have more training and more oversight by the Department of Buildings. There are a number of investigations going on right now, the district attorney and the Department of Investigation in the buildings department, federal government, somebody suggested they should get involved. We just don't need another investigation, thank you. I appreciate the efforts, but, you know, send us money. That's what we could use. And we have a guy, the acting commissioner of the Department of Buildings, who I have enormous confidence in. He, right away last Saturday, the latest accident happened last Friday. Saturday, he had 80 stakeholders in a room, the construction companies and developers and unions and the buildings department and suppliers, and they've come up with some things. We announced the program the other day train. We've actually added a number of building inspectors. I think it's 66% more today than 6 years ago. But, you know, a building inspector can't be every place, but now we inspect when you jump the crane, and do we have to... We've tried to isolate it down to where these accidents happen, whether they're stepping a crane or pouring cement, or there's two or three different activities where the bulk of the accidents take place. And, you know, as I said, this is not not balancing safety with development. We have to have development, no mistake about it, but safety is going to come first. Until we can be assured, to the extent humanly possible, that the practices are consistent with the best business best practices that we know of, we're just not going to allow anything to go ahead. Construction industry and the developers and the unions all understand that. It's the union members getting killed and non-union construction workers. The construction companies get sued. The developers lose money. Everybody's got a vested interest here in helping, making sure that the public is safe. And that's
Some discussion about going back to these cranes, these tower cranes that they use to build these big buildings? They used to be in the center of the building.
It depends on the design. I've asked that.
Is there any advantage?
Some cases you can do it. You know, sometimes maybe there are differences as to why. But there's no reason to think that the risks with these cranes aren't minimal. After all, there are thousands, tens of thousands of these things all over the world. And I think in Bogota there was a crane accident last week, somebody told me.
I'm sure they happen around the world on a daily basis, probably.
What I'm concerned about is making sure they don't happen here in this city.
Okay. OTB, it's been a bugaboo of yours for a long time because Albany has been sucking more money than OTB has been making out of the city.
Yep.
Now, we're supposed to close down next week.
If we do not have a deal with the state, we will close it down. We have sent out layoff notices, which is what the law requires. We've taken all of the legal steps. This city is not going to subsidize a bookie operation. Now, there is a solution to the problem, and we are working well with the legislature.
That solution is for Albany to take less money?
There's a variety of ways you can do it, but the results, we're working with the governor, with the Senate, and with the Assembly, and my hope is that we will sooner rather than later, and certainly before we have to close it down, because we're not coming back off. That's a drop-dead date, period.
June 15th.
We've been talking about, I think Giuliani talked about the problem. We've been talking about it for 6 years. Somebody in Albany said the other day, so I'm quoting the paper, oh, we don't have time. What do you mean time? We've told you for a year we're going to close it down, or 6 months, whatever it is. We are closing it down. When I say we're going to do something, we're going to do it. But I think there is a ways. This OTB was created to generate money for the state and the city as a revenue source to help pay for schools and cops and firefighters and whatever. Instead, it has really become a subsidy for the racing industry. I don't have a problem with the racing industry. It's, you know, not my bag, if you will. I'm going to go to Belmont to
watch the big horse.
Yeah, maybe see Triple Crown. That'd be fun. It's a nice thing to do. It's, you know, Belmont is close to the city, or part city.
It's one step over the line.
Well, okay. I think parking lot is in the city. But what I'm going anyways is New York City's representative. Be fun. I want to make sure that we have a long-term solution. A short-term fix is a non-starter with us, and that's been offered, and we've said no, and I think they now understand that. A sunset provision, no. I'm not going to leave to my successor the same problem. I'm trying to fix problems so my successor does not have that problem. And this has got to generate money for the city with an assurance that if people slow down their betting or expenses go up, the city does not lose money. We're just not going to, we can't do everything, and this is not a high priority thing. But I'm optimistic.
Okay, I was just going to ask you, I sense that maybe you're pretty close, or have the potential of being close to a solution.
We always have the potential of being close to a solution in all of these things.
You are so diplomatic.
just trying to get it done. You know?
I understand.
Not start a war.
I understand. Speaking of starting a war, two crazy guys, at least from my point of view, climbing the buildings of New York City yesterday.
I like the cartoon. It's sad, but it was cute in the paper. Somebody's looking out the window saying, this guy, be careful, you could get hit by a crane. Sad because cranes were fatal accidents, but nevertheless, it was a cute thing. Stupid is the word that comes to mind, and personally, I don't even want to talk about it because all you do is you're giving people that want to do these kinds of dumb things more credibility. It is dangerous, and if you want to run the risk of killing yourself, I guess that's your business, but if you fall and kill somebody else, that is the city's business.
So also, the rescue workers are put at risk.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to go and climb a mountain and kill yourself, I guess, yeah, it ain't my business, but this is
but not
business.
Here in New York City.
Yeah, I mean, and it just means, you know, another thing, when you design a building, the architects are now going to have to think a little bit more carefully about making sure it's not something where you can get handheld.
I hadn't even thought about that because it's a problem that I'm sure architects really don't concern themselves with. But life does change. Tell you what we're going to do, Mr. Mayor. Hang on. We'll take our half-hour break right here. We've got a full bank of phones. We'll be getting to those folks. I've got more questions as well. It's all right here on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. And at 8:30, more news and Joe Bartlett. Joe. All right, we continue here. John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 25 minutes before 9 o'clock. There's been some talk about in the papers this week about you wanting to possibly continue in this job of mayor of New York City.
We have term limits, which I have said are probably a good idea. I've always thought that a new guy can do it better. I don't know what's magical about one limit or another limit, but I think term limits are a good idea. And the public has voted for it twice. If the public wanted to vote for it to change it, you know, I don't know that I would do it. Would want to run again. I'm 68. years old when I finish this. Haven't really had a vacation in 6 years. The one thing I can guarantee you, I called the governor the other day because the speculation was not really about running
third term
for mayor
here or governor.
Governor. I said, you know, is there a spot on your ticket for lieutenant governor? I actually think David Pattison is going to be a good governor. It takes a while to get your feet wet. He's got to get his own people in there. He's working on that. He's got to face some issues. I think one of his big issues is this business of the Indians not paying cigarette taxes. It's an enormous loophole, and every governor has promised to do something about it. I think David Pattison's got the courage to stand up, and I haven't talked to him about it, but he should. That's something he should
do.
So
did he offer you the lieutenant governorship?
He did not. He did not. That's, I hadn't thought about that.
He didn't jump on that, but he didn't know.
No. I mean, I better talk to him. I better call him today and see. I don't want to
foreclose.
Say, what
was that oversight?
That's not a job that I would want. And I assume Pattison will run again in 3 years. I'll probably wind up supporting him.
So you were saying here that you don't want the third term and you don't want the governorship.
Yeah. That's a fair way to summarize.
That was the defining, the reading between the lines?
I mean, it's flattering that some people have said, you know, we'd like to change term limits and have you stay on. If they didn't want to do that, think of what they're saying about you. You know, anybody that doesn't want, I don't know that I want to do it, but if they don't want it, it says that they don't think you're doing a good job, I guess.
The city charter that I know that you wanted to, or think that maybe some changes should be made in the city charter.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that you could do things better. If you remember when I first came into office, I tried to get we put on the ballot through a charter commission an idea to change the electoral process to have nonpartisan elections in the city. We do, in fact, have nonpartisan elections already for any special elections that anybody can run. But whenever you have one party that dominates a geographical entity, anybody outside of that party has no realistic chance. So when people say to me, oh, you know, who's going to succeed you, it is going to probably be somebody from the Democratic Party. And there's a possibility not. Rudy did win and then got reelected. I did win and got reelected. But those were aberrations. The second election with Rudy was not. It was because they liked what he did the first term. My second election victory was not because of an aberration. It was because they liked what I did the first term. But I think it's fair to say both cases that Rudy is running as a Republican and me running as a Republican could win was not the norm. And so when I think I spent $7 million of my own money to try to educate the public, they turned it down reasonably overwhelmingly, which means you are going to have the most likely candidate, no guarantees, but the most likely candidates would be somebody who works their ways up through the Democratic Party, because we're an overwhelmingly Democratic town. It would be the Republican Party in another city if it's overwhelmingly Republican. And if you work your ways up, you're not obviously going to have executive experience, so we are not likely to have another business person or somebody with executive experience as mayor. Now, some people without executive experience have been great mayors. Doesn't guarantee. There's nothing magical about that, but that's the facts. The public votes. I'm a big believer in democracy. That's what they wanted. I didn't agree with it, but that's what they wanted, and that's what they, you know, have selected, and that's fine.
Your reaction, speaking of people voting, Barack Obama will be the
Well, it's historic. You know, you could have had the first woman. Looks like you'll have the first African-American as a candidate. I think it's much too early to tell who's going to win that competition, but you know they're very different guys. Each brings very different strengths and weaknesses, and the public's going to have a choice. I will keep urging both of them to speak out and tell us how they would manage Congress, which is one of the president's biggest jobs. How they will address those problems that are third rail. Everybody's afraid to talk about improving public education in this country and taking on some entrenched interests. Everybody's afraid to take on all the entrenched interests in medical care and pay for it. Everybody's afraid to...
Social Security.
That we just don't have a birth rate big enough to pay your Social Security, and we're stopping immigrants from coming into this country. We have this terrible xenophobia in parts of this country. Somebody's got to stand up and say, you know, this country was built by immigrants. We desperately need more. That's they're the ones that can create
we
jobs.
We need the process
to
manage it, don't you? I know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But to close the borders is craziness. This is just insanity. I mean, we, the rest of the world wants the best and the brightest, and we're driving them away. You can't fight terror without international cooperation. You can't. Medicine, science is going to develop entrepreneurship overseas. That's our future. We're giving it away. This is the biggest. I gave in a speech last week. I said the greatest case of mass suicide I've ever seen. I mean, this country is deliberately trying to kill itself. We need leadership. And here you're going to have two people, and Obama and McCain, and they've got to tell the public why they could do that and how they're going to do it and what the sacrifices are going to be. There's no free lunch. And how they're going to raise the money and what other things we can't buy. And
the price of fuel, again, do you think that is it's certainly a hindrance. It's certainly different than we've had. But do you think it's ultimately going to change things, or does the tide just rise and we all work for
it? No. There's no question. If fuel costs go up, the cost of food goes up, cost of transportation goes up, economy slows down. It was fascinating. I don't know if I mentioned it last week. Diana and I had dinner with the ambassador from one of the United Nations, from one of the Emirates, and we're talking about his country's policies. They're trying to reduce their dependency on fuel. We're trying to reduce the cost here so that we use more of it, huh?
Yeah, well, exactly so. I mean, there is that argument, but as you said, the costs go up.
Look,
and how do we,
there's no free lunch. If you want the energy, you're going to have to find a ways to do it. That's fundamentally in Europe. They believe it's nuclear. I believe that too. Without that, you're always going to have this enormous dependency. It's not perfect, but it's better than the alternatives. You're going to have to use some alternative sources. That means windmills. If you see the windmills, I'm sorry. That's you're going to have to see them if you want the energy from them. I mean, you know, all of these different things, and subsidizing the old line in coal and petroleum industries and not diverting money to the new jobs and new alternative sources of energy just is leaving this country. Every day this country gets into more and more trouble, and every day the West is exporting our wealth in enormous, unprecedented quantities to the third world, other parts of the world, where they don't like us, and they're using this money to hurt us. And the size of the wealth transfer is staggering. The economists can't calculate.
It's unimaginable.
Unimaginable is a good word, yes.
The amount of money. You should think about running for president.
Right.
You mentioned the cigarette tax, which just went up an additional $1.25.
One of the smartest things the legislature ever did. It'll save hundreds of thousands of lives.
Packs of cigarettes now upwards around $10, whatever the number is. But it has created and fueled a black market in cigarettes.
Well, there's two places. One is people buying cigarettes in other states and smuggling them in. And I saw in the paper today there was a sting operation. The feds arrested 20 or 30-odd people. The other one is the loophole through the Indians. I mean, somebody said to me the other day that the Indians, they burnt some tires or threatened to burn some tires years ago on one of the throughways, and the governor, whoever it was at the time, backed down. Yeah, I can just tell you, in New York City, if you want to break the law and you threaten, you say, well, you got to let us continue to break the law or we'll burn some tires in the streets, good luck. That's what we have the NYPD for. Next case.
And, again, this is what happens. You know, the black market grows when the tax rate goes up. Is there...
Well, there's lots of black markets and everything. That's no reason to stop taxing cigarettes, incidentally.
That's correct. But is there some irony that the tax revenues generated from the high taxes from cigarettes will prevent people from smoking, so that the revenues hopefully will go down, and therefore
the best thing that could ever happen to us is if we had to sit here one Friday morning and say, okay, we've got to find another revenue source because everybody stopped smoking and we have no revenue from cigarette taxes, tobacco taxes. I don't think that's very likely, incidentally, but that would save you and I nothing. The state could do this. Our state government, by raising the taxes, literally the legislators and the governor should go home tonight and look in a mirror and say, I really did something. I've saved hundreds of thousands of lives, because that's the effect of it.
And it's been proved with the banning of smoking.
You know, we've reduced teenage smoking by 52%, by adult smoking by something like 20%. It will save 100,000 lives in this city over the next few decades. This century, 1 billion people will die prematurely in this world from smoking. And you know, you look at all the press on, you know, and sometimes we have a tragedy of one person. There's 1 billion people, and we know how to stop it. Very easy.
Let me ask you about the gun trial that you have been pressing for so long. Kind of went up in smoke when the gun dealer from
the
down
right
south,
west.
Yeah, took a hike.
Look, all we're trying to do is stop a very small percentage of the gun dealers from breaking the federal law that says they can't sell guns to criminals. We're not trying to stop anybody from buying a gun who legally can buy it in any state where the state sets its own rules. I have no problems with any of that. You want to hunt, you want to own a gun, I mean, you can decide what's in your own interest as long as you comply with the law. And there is federal law in the books that says you can't sell to people with criminal records. You got to do a background check. There are some exemptions, for example, in federal law. Only the federal government could come up with this. If you are a gun dealer and you get convicted of selling guns illegally and they take away your license,
yeah,
all your inventory can be sold without a background check. It's like saying to a drug dealer, you arrest a drug dealer for selling crack, and we're going to put you in the slammer for 20 years. You say, okay, fine, but I have a right to go out in the street and sell all my crack.
Actually,
to the kids.
Somebody suggested that.
That's exactly what they do. They have a gun show loophole. All you got to do is start a gun show and you don't have to do background checks. In this case, we're just trying to get that 1% of the dealers that break the law. And incidentally, there is some evidence that we really are making a difference, because you can track that something called time to crime for a gun, from when the gun is sold to when we confiscate it at a robbery or a murder or a shooting or something or other. And that has been going, we can see that, I guess,
it's
which
longer,
way I got to figure out which way, but it's says that we are doing a better job. Fewer guns are coming into the city. And it turns out that a lot of the guns that are used are not guns that were sold many years ago. Those are in somebody's drawer, who knows where they go.
These are newly minted.
That's exactly right. And if you take a look at arrests for owning guns, I think it's about 19 years old is the high point of the age of the person who we arrest holding a gun. It drops off precipitously afterwards, and it grows precipitously before. This is a scourge of our society, and we are doing great. NYPD is doing a great job of continuing to bring down crime, that's going in the right direction. But having said that, our murder rate now last year was below 500. Down from 2,200 back in the 70s. But if you look in Europe, it's a tenth of what we have, because they don't have all the guns. This is not rocket science stuff, folks.
I talk about it even when you're not here. I couldn't agree with you more on that one. It's 12 now before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we've got a full bank of phones here at 1-800-321-0710. If you'd like to give a try, give a call. I've got a question for the mayor. You will be next at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and now you at 8 minutes before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, we got a bunch of phone calls here. Let's see. You want to start with Joe in Brooklyn on line 5. Joe, you've got the mayor. What's your question?
I'd just like to know how the residency law is going for city employees. And I just also want to say it's great to hear the two of you together. I still think the mayor should run for governor.
Well, I'm not going to run for governor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You already nixed that idea, Joe.
I don't think so. The residency laws there. Back, I think it was in Dinkins' time when everybody was leaving the city, there was a requirement put in that city employees live in the city because we needed more residents. That made sense then. Fundamentally, if you're going to design a system today where we don't have enough housing for all the people, you would not have a residency requirement like that because we don't have enough housing as
right.
It is. In fact, what has happened over the years is we've negotiated as part of union contracts the right for some city employees to live outside the city, but they must pay city taxes. They can offset local taxes elsewhere, but they have to pay city taxes. And so police and fire, for example, can live in contiguous counties.
I pay a city tax because I work here. It would be the same.
No, this is not the same.
Different?
This is the income tax. You don't pay
okay.
A, that would be a commuter tax, which
right.
We should have had, incidentally, a separate issue. Anyways, in this case, they do pay that. They can live in contiguous counties. Now, how Rockland and Suffolk became defined as contiguous
is lost in the midst of government.
When I looked at a map, I couldn't believe that was contiguous. Then somebody explained to me how government geography was calculated, and I said, oh, okay, it's a new business to me. But we also negotiated with DC 37, the union that really has the most diverse group of people. They have 100-plus different job titles, every conceivable thing from doctors in the hospitals to blacksmiths that shoe the horses.
I didn't even know. Okay.
Sure. We have basket weavers there. You have no idea. We have 300,000 employees. The city does a lot of things. It's easy to say we don't need that or I wouldn't know, but trust me, I'm sure you can find something. But when people say, I'm going to balance the budget by cutting out waste, they just have no idea. It would probably cost you more to find it than to save. We should go after it. We do go after it. But that's no big revenue source. Government works much better than people think. Anyways, the city council has to pass a law. A home rule message to the state, and then the state's got to pass a law, and it's been tied up in that politics. The city council wanted to get involved in labor negotiations. I said absolutely not. But my basic theory is it's a bargainable thing. The city should work with the unions, and fundamentally, if you want to live outside the city in a time when we don't have enough housing, it's fine with me. It's a good idea.
Makes sense. All right, Joe, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see here. We're going to go to Rebecca in Brooklyn. Rebecca, you're with the mayor. Go.
Hi.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I live across a public school, and the staff comes over to our side of the street to smoke because the law says that they can't smoke in front of the school. And I ask them to stop, but they don't do anything about it. I have little kids.
Where's the what school is it?
I don't know exactly which school it is.
Yeah.
It's an intermediate school. That's all that I know.
On what street? And I'll just have the
it's in Williamsburg.
In Williamsburg. I'll talk to the school department. It may very well be that just there's nothing they can do about it. Sidewalks are public. You can smoke on them. If people go across the street, not on school property, probably nothing we can do about it. I think the only thing I can suggest is when you walk by, look at them as, so that they feel that, people are looking at me. Smoking may not be a cool thing. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. It'd save their lives and make your neighborhood better. So that's
all right.
The thing I can hope.
We move on. We've got out to Forest Hills in Queens. This is Wallace. Wallace, good morning. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor Bloomberg.
Good morning.
There's a problem. I'm all for the bicycles, but they are beginning to spill over and onto the sidewalks and race through the sidewalks with a vengeance, not only in the boroughs, but in Manhattan, in many of the tourist spots. And I've seen people hit. I've seen people jump out into the streets in the front of traffic, tourists, and things like that. It happens.
You're right. I mean, I've seen it happen, too. Not a lot, but I've seen it happen. There's nothing perfect, and not everybody behaves the way you should in a civil society, particularly when you have high density. It is dangerous. The rules say you shouldn't be riding, can't ride bicycles on sidewalks, and a lot of the kids do. If they do it out in a very, residential area, I guess there's probably no harm, even if they
shouldn't do it. Sixth Avenue would not be the place.
Sixth Avenue is not the place to do it. The police department, I think, probably tries, but, it can't be every place, and they've got to make some judgments as to what's the most important thing.
I saw a little squib this morning in the newspaper that I have to ask you about, because I know that you've become very green, and it's important to you about making the city efficient, but there was a story about the city is putting rain barrels.
I saw that. I made a joke with Stu Loser on my way in about it. The idea, it's not the stupidest idea. The idea is to collect the rain and use it not to drink, but to use it to water your lawn, and that would put a smaller demand on the city's water supply. I will say that if you look at the billions of gallons that come through from our reservoirs every day, this is a very small percentage of it. But for example, in Bermuda, they don't have basically public water system. Every roof has this tiered structure. You collect the water, you put it into tanks in your basement. Typically put guppies, little tropical fish, in. It's totally dark. They can't see anything, but they can survive fine, and they eat the algae and the flies so that the water stays clean, and Bermuda's water is great.
We could have cisterns any day now.
It's different here. We don't have the roof, roof capacity per person. If you
I completely understand. Tourism up big time?
Down international tourism down 17% in the country, up 9% in New York. And when people say it's the weak dollar, if it was the weak dollar, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, Boston, Atlanta, those cities would, that are Miami, they're tourist cities as well, they would be getting the bulk of the tourism, and it's not. It's only New York, and we can say why New York, you know, the right answer.
Because there's no other place you want to go.
That's exactly the right answer. I was thinking more of the management of the city, but you can
say that's one.
I would never leave
the
witness.
What it is.
Seriously, we moved up our target. We had set a target of 50 million visitors by 2015. We now think we'll hit it by 2012. Tourism, whether it's domestic or foreign, is the lifeblood of our city. These are the jobs. The jobs get created, particularly starting up the economic ladder. But even in the luxury goods and the high price, the high price hotels, restaurants, wine merchants, fashion industry. I was honored to get an award for helping the fashion industry the other night.
Yes, I saw your picture. You were resplendent.
Thank you very much. Great tie, matched Diana's dress. Everybody was pleased. I've never said how we coordinated. But regardless,
you were in the closets holding your tie up to the dress.
Absolutely, but seriously, it's, you know, that industry. It's all of these and the people, the jobs that are created throughout the whole city and from the very beginning of the economic ladder right up through tourism, phenomenally important to our city.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week and this session here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Enjoy the week. Stay cool over the weekend.
You too.
Have fun playing your golf today.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you next Friday. That's going to do it for me, John Gambling. We're done, too. See you on Monday. This is News Talk Radio 710 WOR. It's 9.